Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spicy with new topics every single week, and jamming you through a daily dose of UFC. And we have a massive, massive UFC event this weekend. UFC 316 featuring two title fights, multiple ranked contenders, multiple former champions on this card. It is massive. The main event, the rematch, Merab Dvalishvili takes on Sugar Sean O'Malley. And honestly, as unhype as this rematch is, I have managed to just build some animosity, at least with myself, for this card overall. I believe there is 12 matchups here, and I mean, that's just me guessing because I know how many actual fights there are in here, but there is a lot of good matchups on this card, and I cannot wait on today's episode to go through and cover each and every single one of them, dropping our predictions on who we think will win, in what regards, and what's going to go down, because there are a lot of heavy favorites on this card, which I find very, very odd. But we are going to be kicking things off on today's episode with our Money in the Bank predictions. That's right, Money in the Bank, the fifth biggest WWE event of the year. Some may even say the fourth biggest WWE event of the year, coming at you from the Intuit Dome in Los Angeles, California. We got four matchups currently, so we're going to go through and drop our predictions and what we think will happen for that, as we are WWE fans on this podcast. So other than that, no new UFC fights have been announced. There isn't really any other movies or TV shows I've watched, so your surprise topic for today is your Money in the Bank predictions. We're going to dive right on into it. I mean, that's your intro. That's your 90-second intro. We do it every single episode, so we're going to dive right into our Money in the Bank prediction. So yes, for whoever doesn't know, we've covered it multiple times now, but WWE Money in the Bank, the whole premise of the Money in the Bank matchup is there are six superstars. They have to climb a ladder, and at the top is a briefcase, in quotations, that is the Money in the Bank, and whichever superstar gets the briefcase, they are then able to cash in at any time to win any championship they please. Every single instance except for one, it has been for a world championship. And we got four matchups currently on the card, and honestly, it has been a weird buildup. It's been a very, very weird buildup to this event. I will say that the women's Money in the Bank ladder match is currently the most one I'm most excited for. Now, I think that one on paper will not main event, but in terms of what match is going to deliver the hardest and which one is going to, whatever winner is going to win, is going to just kind of show us what direction the women's wrestling division is going to head into, should be the main event. But it's not going to be the main event. There's one of two options for the main event. We're going to discuss that, but we will start with the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match for a women's championship match contract, as it says. I do believe this should open the show. You know, there's only four bouts. I don't know if they're going to announce one on perhaps SmackDown the day before, but we'll go with this. So the current women superstars that are in this are Alexa Bliss, Roxanne Perez, Rhea Ripley, Julia, Naomi, and Stephanie Vaquera. So for anyone who is casuals, as many of you are probably, Alexa Bliss, she was out of action for a while. She's won the world championship before. She's kind of this goth, kind of this like scary gimmick she's been going with. Roxanne Perez was an NXT champion, which would basically be like it's kind of like a better version of the G League to the NBA of NXT in terms of Raw and SmackDown. She was a champion down there, and now she's been called up. Rhea Ripley is the top girl. She's the top guy, if you want to say that, in the women's division. Julia, Stephanie Vaquera, both recently called up. They were also NXT Women's Champions. And Naomi is probably one of the hottest heels in the company right now. Heel as in a bad guy. So who do I think is going to win this? I mean, it's pretty much process of elimination with these matchups. You know, I'll say any of them could actually win. If anyone wins, I'm not going to be too surprised, but there will be some surprises. So first off, who do I not think is going to win? First off, Alexa Bliss. And that's because she recently came back in January from I swear it was a two-year layoff, and she's just not really in a position to be challenging for a major title like this. I think when we mention the Intercontinental Championship women's match in a bit, that's a title she should go for, even a singles feud somewhere. But Money in the Bank, she's won it before, and I just don't think now is the place for her. Now, we kind of get into a three-way tie here with Roxanne Perez, Julia, and Stephanie Vaquera. They've all been recently called up. In order, if you will, Roxanne Perez was called up, then Julia, then Stephanie Vaquera. And they all could win it. And if they give the contract to any of them, I think it would be a big showing that this is going to be a future star. They did it with Tiffany Stratton. If they did with one of these, I would very much love it. And out of those three, who is most likely to get it? So at the bottom of that, Julia. So Julia, out of the six, probably coming in at fifth. And out of the three we're talking about, she's at the bottom. She just, you know, she is so good. She's so talented, but I don't think she has the same hype with the fans compared to the other two. And that's not saying she doesn't have great hype, great in-ring ability, great promos. I just don't think they're ready for her right now. I can see her winning the Women's World Championship or the WWE Women's Championship, but for right now, I don't think she's going to be winning the Money in the Bank ladder match for the women. After that, gonna go with probably Roxanne Perez. You know, Roxanne Perez has been fighting for her dues much longer than Stephanie Vaccaro, but Stephanie Vaccaro came in and just took the NXT Women's Division by storm so good that they had to call her up because they're bringing in, I believe her name is Maria May or something. She is gonna be the next hottest thing in NXT for the Women's Division. But as for Stephanie Vaccaro, she is probably my third pick. I'd say out of the rookies, if you will, she would be my most favorite to actually win Women's Money in the Bank. But Roxanne Perez, I just don't think they're ready to pull the trigger on her. Now, if they do, I'm more than happy, but I just don't think they're going to do that. Now, we get into the final two, Rhea Ripley and Naomi. Now, one thing that has been easy to observe for WWE fans is that the Money in the Bank briefcase works much better when it's in the hands of a heel. So a lot of people are going to go with Naomi for this, and you know, I think Naomi is a great prediction, but I remember it's been 8 years, you know, Naomi has won the world championship before. Naomi has been that girl, and right now, you know, there is just, WWE loves to do stuff with merch, and they're not going to be able to do much with merch with Naomi, and as much as she has okay promos, okay in-ring ability, I think her gimmick and character overall is what's carrying her. I think Mommy in the Bank, Rhea Ripley, is the direction they are going to go. Rhea Ripley is just so over. Rhea Ripley is on a whole nother level. The fact she's been able to create this character and just create this build around her is honestly so impressive. I mean, everyone you see in WWE, obviously there's a creative team, there's a production team, but really it's the superstars themselves that create these personas and bring them to life. And Rhea Ripley has done an amazing job with it. And I think giving her the Money in the Bank briefcase is such a good play, but it is the veteran play. Rhea Ripley is a veteran at this point when we look at, I mean, age-wise, doesn't matter. Same thing goes for UFC, you know. Age doesn't really make you a rookie. It's how soon you've came into the sport. And Rhea Ripley's been at this for a while. So my prediction is going to be Rhea Ripley to win the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. But I can see a case for Naomi. I can see a case for Stephanie Vaccaro. Stephanie Vaccaro would be super shocking, and I would love that. The real shockers, I think, Alexa Bliss, Roxanne Perez, and Julia. If any of them win it, I think that would be a big, wait a second, no one saw this coming. So the big three favorites, Rhea Ripley, Naomi, and Stephanie Vaccaro, I'm going to go with Rhea Ripley to win. Following that, I think we're just going to knock the other women's matchup right out of the way. You know, I think they might go men's, women, or they might go women, women, men's, men. Depends on the order, but we have a rematch. We have a rematch for the Women's Intercontinental Championship, and it is called a Last Chance Match, Lara Valkyra versus Becky Lynch. If Becky Lynch loses, she can no longer challenge for the title as long as Valkyra is champion, and if Lara Valkyra loses, she'll be forced to raise Lynch's hand and acknowledge Lynch as the better woman. That's the stupidest thing ever. Honestly, Triple H has been kind of on a downhill. You know, everyone had confidence in Triple H, and that confidence is starting to flail. I mean, come on, why don't we just do a stipulation? You know, the run-of-the-mill WWE feud is you have a singles match, then you have a stipulation, and then you have an even better stipulation. That is how you do feuds, for goodness sakes. And here we have just a and here's what it is. Okay, Lara Valkyra wins. Becky Lynch can't challenge for the title as long as she holds the belt, so once she loses it, she can go right back for the Intercontinental Championship. And then as for the other stipulation, if Lara Valkyra loses, she has to raise Lynch's hand and say she is better. I mean, this is absolutely what I would do at Marketing Club when we had no funds to get a prize when we would play a game, and I'd be like, okay, whoever wins can just say they're better than everyone else, and that's what's going to be. Now, it was comedic, but it wasn't that interesting. So I think what you need to do here is have Becky Lynch win. If Becky Lynch doesn't win, then I hate to say it, this feud was kind of for naught. Really was kind of for naught. And if Lara Valkyra is able to get past Becky Lynch here, I can't see a case that she should lose to anyone else. besides your Rhea Ripley, Charlotte Flair's Alexa Bliss's. So I think really the best move here is to give Becky Lynch the WWE Women's Intercontinental Championship, and you could have a trilogy matchup at Night of Champions. I know that's coming up. So yeah, that's what you can do there. Should be interesting, but this should be a fantastic singles matchup, and it is the only singles matchup currently on the card, unless we get a Jacob Fatu match added or something, which I doubt. This will be your only singles match. So we are going to go with Becky Lynch, probably get a submission win. That's what's going to happen. Following that, I'm going to go with the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. You know, WWE's just done this historical thing where they have these random tag team matches between the top guys in the company to end the show. They did it last year with Cody Rhodes versus Solo Sikoa and their group of guys. Before that, it was Roman Reigns and Solo versus the Usos. It's just been a staple. I don't know what they did in 2022, but I do know in 2021, they had Edge versus Roman Reigns with John Cena returning. That was awesome. For this, I don't really know. So as for the men's Money in the Bank, we'll talk about that. Right now, we have Solo Sikoa, LA Knight, Penta, Seth Rollins, Andrade, and El Grande Americano. And the big swerve, the big thing everyone is in arms about is that El Grande Americano, a.k.a. Chad Gable, beat not only CM Punk, but also AJ Styles to qualify for this Money in the Bank ladder match. And he has a matchup earlier in the day at Worlds Collide, which is another WWE PLE that they're doing earlier in the day with a different promotion. So El Grande Americano is not winning Money in the Bank. That would be one of the weirdest swerves I've ever seen, personally. So it just feels like a weird thing that we're not having CM Punk on this card. It really sucks, the burying of AJ Styles. It's just so unnecessary. It's like Tony Ferguson, but where you don't actually have to have Tony Ferguson lose. You can just have Tony Ferguson win. That's AJ Styles. Just someone with so much talent, but he's getting older, and they just won't pull the trigger on him to give him one last run. And apparently there's no plan for him and John Cena to have one last match against each other. That's really heartbreaking. So El Grande Americano is not winning. Another guy is not winning, Penta. And I absolutely love Penta. He's so entertaining, but he doesn't do promos. He's kind of just this silent mystic character, this luchador who is super entertaining. And I honestly think in the matchup, he's probably going to cost Chad Gable or El Grande Americano. Those two are going to take each other out to some regard. But Penta just wouldn't really work with the briefcase. He works for the Intercontinental Championship, the United States Championship. He's a mid-card wrestler. He's not going to be the guy to carry us on with the Money in the Bank briefcase. And hopefully they don't do what they did last year with Drew McIntyre cashing in and failing on the same night. That was super unnecessary. So I'm really hoping they don't do that with this. So that brings us to our final four here. You know, we got Andrade, Seth Rollins, LA Knight, and Solo Sikoa. And we're just in an interesting spot with all four, because Seth Rollins is the favorite pick, but there's just, you could tell WWE's teasing the returns of Roman Reigns to cost him the Money in the Bank, even though it makes sense you should give Seth Rollins the Money in the Bank. You should give Seth Rollins the Money in the Bank. You should give Bron Breakker the Intercontinental Championship. You should give him and Bronson Reed the Tag Team Championships. You know, you need to make their group, give them some decor, if you will. And, you know, the fact that it really appears Seth Rollins isn't going to win might be a swerve that he is, but I'm actually going to outlaw Seth Rollins. I'm not going to say Seth Rollins is going to get it done. Now, I hope he does, because I think it would be best for business this time, but I actually don't think so. Which brings us to Andrade, Solo Sikoa, and LA Knight. And, you know, Andrade, I would love with the briefcase. I would love for them to put the World Heavyweight Championship or WWE Championship on him, but I just don't see them doing it. I really don't see them doing it, in my humble opinion. That's just how I view it. So that brings us to Solo Sikoa and LA Knight. And I think we have to observe who the current champions are. Who the current champions are, and you have to observe that John Cena is the WWE champion. And if you're going to have this person vying for a certain belt, you know, it's either going to be Jey Uso or John Cena, which might even be Gunther, because Gunther and Jey Uso have a match on Raw. I just have a sneaky suspicion they might give it to LA Knight to go after John Cena. That's what I think is going to take place. That's what I think may be going down. But honestly, as I speak my words, I got to be honest. I think I might go with Seth Rollins. It just makes so much sense to give Seth Rollins the belt, or the belt, the briefcase. He can cash in on Jey Uso. He can cash in on Gunther. He can cash in on John Cena. He can cash in on Cody Rhodes, for goodness sakes. It honestly makes a lot of sense. But then you also have CM Punk messing up the cash, messing up Seth Rollins winning. Oh, this is just really good. WWE has done such a good job booking both of their Money in the Bank ladder matches, and it just really leaves me sort of. So with that, our official prediction, Solo Sikoa. That's right, we're going to go with Solo Sikoa because, you know what? I can't find a reason for everyone else and for Solo. There really isn't a reason. He's Solo Sikoa. He's a meme. And if he wins, it would make no sense. It would make no sense. And honestly, I could see him cashing in on Jacob Fatu. I can honestly see him cashing in on the United States Championship. So we got Rhea Ripley, Becky Lynch, and son of a gun, we're going to go with Solo Sikoa just for the memes. But overall, whoever wins this, I'm very excited to see, and it is going to be fun because there is not a predictable winner, and there isn't really a predictable winner for any of these matchups, which I absolutely love. That has been one of the sad blessings of the post-Roman Reigns era, is that no matchups are predictable. Also with Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes, when he's vying for a championship, used to be predictable. Now it's not predictable, so I guess that is a good thing. With that, we get to what I presume will be the main event, Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso versus John Cena and Logan Paul. And I absolutely love the swerve WWE did with everyone thinking and wanting, I should better say not thinking, wanting John Cena to take on Logan Paul as one of the final matches of his retirement tour. And instead, here they are teaming together against the buddy duo of Jey Uso and Cody Rhodes. I absolutely love that. Now, this matchup has had really no build. It started at Saturday night's main event. They have had some promos. John Cena hasn't. They've had some promos with Cody Rhodes, Jey Uso, and I don't even know if Logan Paul is at a promo, but they had some stuff on Raw. They might have some on this upcoming SmackDown in a day. There just hasn't been much build. It hasn't been much build. And what's the end game here? What's the end game? Like honestly, we're going to need a big return here. We're going to need The Rock to return. We're going to need CM Punk to get involved somehow. We're going to need, I don't know, something big to happen here. And I really feel that they will. I feel like we're going to get a promo of some regards with someone since there's only four bouts currently on the card. But, I mean, I think the pick here is Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso with Cody Rhodes or Jey Uso pinning John Cena. I honestly think Cody Rhodes pinning John Cena would be the move here. It's just, I don't understand, like, the endgame. Like, here's the thing. Let's assume any of these guys lose. It doesn't do anything. It really doesn't do anything. You know, Night of Champions is coming up. I'm just guessing we're going to get John Cena versus Cody Rhodes in the main event there. And, you know, with Night of Champions, we have so many champions. Are we only going to do five belts on the line? Are we going to do, like, a champion versus champion? You know, John Cena, Jey Uso, that's not going to happen. But my prediction, Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso win. I just think, as I'm looking through, you have a heel Becky Lynch, heel Solo Sikoa, Rhea Ripley's a face. You end the night with Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso winning as faces. But it would be, I'm going to be rooting for John. Okay, I'm going to be rooting for John Cena, Logan Paul to win. And honestly, this duo is so evil. I just absolutely love it. They're Hollywood guys. They are just, they're bad guys. And I can't wait to see the dynamic of John Cena and Logan Paul just tag teaming together. It's going to be super entertaining. And that's what I'm looking forward to. But yes, my predictions, Becky Lynch versus Lyra. Don't really care who wins, but I just think Becky, it's probably best for business if she wins. Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso versus John Cena and Logan Paul, doesn't matter. Rooting for John Cena, picking Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso. Women's Money in the Bank, doesn't matter who wins. Picking and rooting for Rhea Ripley, also rooting for Stephanie Vaquer. Then for the Men's Money in the Bank ladder match, going with Solo Sikoa. Don't really care who wins. Probably rooting for Seth Rollins. But yeah, Money in the Bank, super exciting. I encourage you all to check it out because it is worth it. A watch. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into our action-packed UFC 316, which, of course, they always have potential to be the best pay-per-view of the year. Will it live up to the hype? Let's get right into it with our predictions. Starting off our card, we head to the early prelims, and we kick the card off with a lightweight bout between Marquel Medeiros and Mark the Shark Choniski. I absolutely love the name Mark the Shark. Marquel is 10-1. Mark is undefeated. 8-0. Both men are in the orthodox stance, and UFC stats has not even updated Mark's height or weight or reach or any of that. They ain't got none of that. They ain't got none of that, but this fight is being contested at lightweight. Marquel is the favorite, -245. Mark Choinski, Choinski? Choinski. Mark Choinski is +200. He's the underdog. Marquel was supposed to fight Bellagio Key last weekend. Instead, his fight was, he was pushed back to this weekend, and I don't know what was wrong with him, but now he's taking on Mark Choinski. So we'll start with Marquel. The 28-year-old is on a 8-fight winning streak with his 10-1 record. Born in Texas, but now fights out of Colorado. He has 6 knockouts of his 10 wins, and as of right now, 2-0 in the UFC, won on Day One's Contender Series in 2023 with a round one finish, debuted against Landon Quinones in February of 2024, winning by unanimous decision, and then won earlier this year in March with a split decision over Austin Hubbard. He has left little to be desired, yet nonetheless, he is 10-1 and on a little win streak here. In that fight with Austin Hubbard, you know, it was pretty embarrassing. You know, round one outstruck him. Round two, brutally outgrappled. Round three, it came down to grappling versus striking, and they led more to Marquel Medeiros, but I do think Austin Hubbard probably did win that. Nonetheless, Marquel coming in this one, a bit of momentum. His opponent, Mark Choynski, making his UFC debut, 29 years old, from Oshkosh, Wisconsin, but now fights out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Six finishes of his eight wins, one KO, and five subs. He is a wrestler, and he is the current APFC lightweight champion. How about that? And he actually had a fight booked on June 15th, but instead elected to take this fight on short notice. I just don't know anything about Mark Choynski. I think that is the main factor in me maybe not picking him to win this one. You know, he has a certain look to him. I'll say that. He's got a certain funky look to him. I don't know if he's good. He does have a giant shark tattooed on him, which I absolutely adore. So here we go. We do have some stats actually on him real quick. He's 5'8", so a bit of height to Marquel. And where is that reach? They don't even have his reach stats on another website, but Mark the Shark, it's kind of hard to maybe not go with him, but this has been the year of undefeated fighters losing, and this is a guy fighting on short notice. We're going to go with Marquel Medeiros, but going to be honest, if Mark the Shark wins, I will absolutely lose my mind. I can already see the memes if he wins, but Mark Choynski just doesn't really strike me as a name of someone who's going to win in the UFC. That's just from observation. So best of luck to both these fighters, but Marquel Medeiros will be our prediction. From lightweight to lightweight, we have another matchup in the 155-pound division as Quillen Sakild. Gosh, why are their names so confusing? The Australian Quillen Sakild taking on the Israeli Yanal Red Fox Ashmaz. Quillen 8-1, Yanal 8-1. 6 foot to 5'9", 3 inches in height for Quillen. He also has 6 inches in reach. So actually, 3 inches in height, 6 inches in reach. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen fairly similar. Quillen coming in -485, Yanal +370. We're going to be talking about a lot of heavy favorites and big underdogs on today's card. Quillen, 25 years young, on an 8-fight win streak. He got submitted in his debut and since then has not looked back. He has 3 knockouts and 3 subs. The man from Perth is currently your eternal MMA champion. I guess he left the promotion, but fought on Davis Contender Series in 2024, picked up a grappling win there, and then in UFC 312 in February, got a 19-second knockout of Anshul Jubilee. It was amazing. I remember I was sitting on my buddy's couch, which really makes me sad because I'm realizing I'll never be sitting on my boy's college couch because we're all moved out. But nonetheless, it was a fantastic knockout, and Quillen is coming in with a lot of momentum. The man from Australia fights with passion, and now I've seen him on Davis Contreras Series landing 9 takedowns across 15 minutes, and now I've also seen him knocking a guy out in 19 seconds. I know he is versatile. His opponent, Yanal Ashmaz, 30 years old, 5 years older from Israel, as we already mentioned. 6 finishes as well out of his 8 wins, 4 knockouts, and 2 subs. He had a fight booked against Nurulu Aliyev on January 11th, but that fight fell through, which means the last time he fought was in September against Trevor Peak. He used his grappling in that one to win, landing 9 of 18 takedowns for 8 minutes of control time. Before that, he lost unanimous decision to Chris Duncan in July of 2023, and his win before that came in 2022 when he beat Sam Patterson. I actually think that was early 2023, now that I'm trying to remember. But if you're going to ever see an upset, it's going to be in a fight like this. Both these guys are 8-1. You know, they're both fairly new, and anything can happen. But we are going to back Quillen Sakild. We're trying to maintain our good prediction streak on the year, and we've been doing a very good job on it. 143-72. That's right. We were +71 on predictions. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So we were trying to get that up to +100 by year's end, and we're almost at the halfway point. You know, we've got the month of June, and then we're at the halfway point for the year. So we're going to be leaning on some of these heavy favorites, but both of these matchups to start the card, I'm going to say a pretty 50-50. I'm going to say that there's a lot of 50-50 fights on this card, but I am going to lead with Quillen Sakild because he's coming off a 19-second knockout, and who doesn't love a 19-second knockout? Dropping down to featherweight for our next contest as Jekka Saragai takes on Little Zombie Ju-Sang-Yu. And you may be like, Little Zombie, what does that mean? That is right. That is a nod to the Korean Zombie. Jekka Saragai, 14-4. Ju-Sang-Yu, the young gun, 8-0. Excited for this one. Young gun, I'm saying, as he's actually a year older than Jekka Saragai. No stats for Ju-Sang-Yu. UFC, come on. Come on, we got to update our fighters. Going to be honest, we really got to update them. Jekka Saragai coming in, 30 years old from Indonesia. He has 13 of 14 wins by finish, 9 KOs and 4 subs. And all of his 4 losses, he has been finished in, including 3 of them by submission. Came to the UFC through the road to the UFC with 2 nasty knockouts. Debuted against Ancho Jubilee. Finished round 2, but then November 2023 maintained his UFC contract with a 90-second knockout of Lucas Alexander. Following that, he was submitted last June in a triangle armbar by Weston Wilson. So, Jekka Saragai, much more of a striker. Striker all day, you could say, and you know what? He gets a little riskier in there. That happened with the Weston Wilson loss, where in a minute and 49 seconds, he faced 3 submission attempts, the armbar finally doing him in. We'll see if Jekka can bounce back, which I really don't doubt he can, against Ju-Sang-Yu. Ju-Sang, 31 years old from South Korea, 4 finishes of his 8 wins, 3 KOs, and 1 sub. I don't know much about him, but from what I've seen, he's been pretty dominant on the South Korean scene. He is a minus 500 favorite compared to the plus 370 of Jekka Saragai. So if you are looking for a nasty parlay to start the night, Mark Choinsky, Yanal Ashmov, and Jekka Saragai will bring you in. Just, I can't even imagine how much money you'd win if they all won. But of course, we're going to pick Ju-Sang-Yu, and it's because I love my South Koreans. I can't lie, this undefeated fighter streak, you know, it isn't as prevalent as it used to be. I think a lot of undefeated fighters are still going to lose this year, and don't get me wrong, Ju-Sang-Yu and Mark Choinsky probably both could lose, but Ju-Sang-Yu, I just think from the statistical-wise, I think he's going to get this done, maybe land some takedowns, ground and pound, but Jekka Saragai has just been too wild for me. We're going to go with Ju-Sang-Yu. Plus, he's Little Zombie, man. He's supposed to be the next Korean Zombie, if you will. Moving from featherweight to women's flyweight, we get some ranked competition here. Hello. As number 13th ranked, Ariana De Silva, Queen of Violence is her nickname, takes on the Joker, Wang Kong. Oh my gosh, I love Wang Kong. I adore Wang Kong. 17-10 record for Ariana, 7-1 for Wang Kong. Both women are 5'6", 67-inch reach to 66, so 1 inch for Ariana. And then Orthodox stands for Ariana with a Southpaw stands for Wang Kong. 13th ranked, Ariana De Silva, plus 360, Wang Kong, minus 500. Insane. Insane. 31 years old from Brazil, Ariana De Silva has 10 of her 17 wins by finish, 6 KOs and 4 subs. And out of her 10 defeats, she has been submitted full 1 time and knocked out 4 times. I almost read that backwards. But Ariana, been with the UFC since 2019. This is year 6 for her. And hasn't really done much. You know, she has, of her 10 defeats, I mean, I'm pretty sure 7 of them in the UFC on a 2-fight losing streak right now. Now, mind you, those losses are to the number 6 and number 11th ranked women in the division, Jasmine and Kareen. Hasn't won since 2023 when she submitted Casey O'Neill. So Ariana looking to recapture some magic with an upset win over Wang Kong. But Wang Kong, I mean, 33 years old, Shanghai, 4 finishes of her 7 wins. And I mean, she's a killer. She is a killer, 2-1 in the UFC. She came off of road to the UFC and was upset by Gabrielle Fernandez in November of 2024. But we'll look past that because she came back in February, dominated Bruna Brazil. I mean, when I mean dominated, I mean I have no idea how Bruna Brazil survived. 103 significant strikes to 31. I mean, it was excruciatingly brutal. So Wang Kong, I mean, easy pick here. Ariana, she's going to probably be going for some submission attempts, but Wang Kong is probably going to knock her out. I got Wang Kong knocking Ariana De Silva out cold. It is so hard to pick against any underdogs on this card. And as I'm slowly making my way down, guys, I'm starting to notice I may not be picking a single underdog on this card, which means I'm not super confident in the predictions. But we'll have to see. I don't know. Maybe we'll mix something up. But we are going with Wang Kong for this matchup. From women's flyweight to men's welterweight, you have Chaos, the Ox fighter Williams, against Andreas Bane Gustafsson. Chaos, 15-4, Andreas, 11-2, 6'1 to 6', 1 inch in height for Andreas and 4 inches in reach for Chaos, 77-73. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. The odds much closer here, minus 205 for Chaos, plus 170 for the underdog, Andreas Gustafsson. Chaos coming into this one, 31 years old from Detroit, 9-15 wins by finish, 7 kills and 2 subs. Of his 4 defeats, he's only ever been finished once by submission, and this man has been dying to get a fight. I mean, he was supposed to fight Uros Medic on this card, then he was supposed to fight Albert Todoyason, who was making his debut, and now finally he's gotten Andreas Gustafsson, who was supposed to fight last weekend. So thankfully, Chaos is getting a fight. Fought earlier this year in February and was submitted in round 2 by Gabriel Bonfim. Gabriel Bonfim ran through Chaos, and funny enough, Gabriel Bonfim did so good, they're giving him Wonderboy Thompson. They're giving him Wonderboy Thompson, who was ranked number 12. So clearly they think highly of Gabriel Bonfim. But other than that, the other losses in Chaos Williams' UFC career, Michelle Pereira and Randy Brown by decision. Other than that, dude has some nasty knockouts. Last one was in May in 2024. Knocked out Carlson Harris. He's knocked out Miguel Beza, Abdulrazak Hassan, Alex Morono. This dude is very, very legit. Now, 31, he still has a lot of time to go, but he just is never able to get over humps. Like, you know, Gabriel Bonfim was a tough competition, going to be a tough competitor no matter what, but he couldn't get past him. Randy Brown, I probably didn't actually lose to Randy Brown, if I'm being honest, which really derailed his career, but I mean, that's just that. We'll see how he does here, though. We'll see how he does here. He is a striker through and through. It'll just depend how he does against Andreas Gustafsson. Andreas, coming off from Day West Contender Series, got a round 2 knockout with some knees. He's 34 years old from Sweden, currently riding a 3-fight winning streak. 10 of his 11 wins are by finish, 8 knockouts, 2 subs, and he's supposed to fight in January. Then he's supposed to fight again in February. I mean, this dude has been dying to get a fight, and finally he gets one here. I think if you're going to see a believable underdog winning, it'll be here. But I just don't know anything about Andreas. I'm going to be honest. I don't know a lickety split about Andreas Gustafsson. All I have is his Dana White's Contender Series performance, where he had 4 minutes and 32 seconds of control time in round 1, and then got a knockdown and some ground and pound in round 2. That's all I know. So for Chaos, I have seen him. I've seen the knockout power. So if Andreas can land some takedowns to get that done, he will get the victory, but as of right now, I am going to be going with Chaos Williams. I'm a little torn now. You know, I won't lie. Andreas is 34. That's not the most appetizing, but there's just something about him. Let me actually get one last look at Andreas Gustafsson here, because, you know, I'm thinking, guys, I haven't picked a single underdog. I don't know if I'm going to. You know, he has kind of a tough look to him, but he also has that old person type of look. That's kind of what he has. He is an old-looking 34. Chaos Williamson looks 31, and we're going to see if Chaos is able to bounce back. I'm going to say he bounces back with a round 1 knockout. But we'll have to leave him up to Jesus, I suppose. Chaos Williamson by round 1 knockout. That's my prediction. I suppose for my other ones, I got Wang Kong landing a knockout, Jusang Yu, probably a decision, Marco Madero's decision, Quillen Sekila, knockout. I can see a decision or knockout or submission, honestly, for any of these fights. These prelims are very, very competitive. We are going to stick with Chaos Williamson for this one. After that, we get into a fight which I am, you know, I'm not too surprised it's on the prelims, but I mean, nonetheless, this far down as we have the number 7 and number 11th ranked heavyweights in Sergey Spivak, the Polar Bear, and Waldo Salsaboy, Cortez Acosta. It's crazy to think how dead the men's heavyweight division is. That used to be the premier division, and now there's not a single fight booked in the top 10. And we are not counting Rizvan Kuniyev versus Curtis Blaydes. That one does not count. Right, Derek Lewis, Talashon Teixeira, that's going to be an interesting fight. Other than that, no one else has a fight booked. But Sergey 17-5, Waldo 13-1. Sergey minus 140, Waldo plus 120. Odds are fairly close for this contest. 6'4 to 6'3, an inch in height for Waldo. Both men have a 78-inch reach, orthodox stance. I mean, these two are fairly similar build-wise. Sergey, 30 years old from Moldova. Crazy to think he's 30. Dude, he was fighting in the UFC when he was 24 years old. 15 of his 17 wins by finish, 7 KOs and 8 subs. And out of his 5 losses, he's been knocked out 4 times. He's actually supposed to fight Shamil Gaziev earlier in May and on this card, but Shamil Gaziev just clearly has health problems. Shamil Gaziev, the greatest men's heavyweight of all time. That's sarcasm right there. But yeah, Sergey Spivak, been with the UFC for a while. His losses, Walteris, Prime Walteris, Marcin Tybura, Tom Aspinall, still gone. Most recently, Halton Almeida in January. He's only lost to the best. And actually, his last three losses, the number one, the number two, and the number six guys all ahead of him. So, Sergey Spivak, other than that, beats everyone else. Last win was Marcin Tybura in August, dominated him. Before that, Derek Lewis, Augusto Sakai, Greg Hardy. Sergey Spivak, grappler, ground and pounder, that's the name of the game for Sergey. And he actually landed a takedown on Halton Almeida, funny enough. Now, obviously, Halton reversed it, but do just want to show how good Sergey Spivak is on the ground. His opponent, Waldo Cortez Acosta, 33 years old, from the Dominican Republic, but now trains in Phoenix. And from here on out, you're going to see a lot of fighters who are from Arizona. Waldo, 6 KOs, 1 sub, about a 50% just over finish rate on a 4-fight winning streak. He is 6-1 in the UFC. He's all right. He's all right, you know. His finishes are over Lucas Brzezic and Ryan Spann. You want to know who Lucas Brzezic and Ryan Spann are? Those are natural light heavyweights. Just want to let you know that. The Andre Arlovski win, boring. Probably actually didn't win that. Robelis Despenge just grappled him to a victory. He has not lived up to any potential, really. I mean, from a guy who had a great knockout in his career series, hasn't done much in the UFC. Last got a win in March. Did what he had to do, but as for this one, I got Sergey Spivak taking him down, ground and pounding him, name of the game, getting a submission maybe. Sergey Spivak does it best. Just going to say that right now. Waldo, out of all the fighters I've discussed so far, if he wins, that would be a huge shocker. That'd be a huge shocker, because Waldo Cortez Acosta would be going from ranked number 11, which, by the way, no idea how he's ranked number 11. When we look at some other ranked number 11 ranked fighters in the UFC, Johnny Walker, Brendan Allen, Jeff Neal, Rafael Fiziev, Gene Silva, Ahmed Zahabi. I mean, we are not talking about Waldo Cortez Acosta, for goodness sake. So if he wins, that would be insane, but I just don't really see a path to victory. If there's anyone who should be minus 500, I think it should be Sergey Spivak. And as I say this, we're going to come back Monday, and we're all going to be discussing about how I was brutally wrong. But I don't think I'm going to be wrong. I'm going to be riding with Sergey Spivak. After that, second to last prelim here. Wow, a lot of prelims. We head to the men's light heavyweight division as the number 12 ranked Azamat Mirzakhanov takes on the unranked Brenson Ribeiro. Azamat the Professional Mirzakhanov. He finally decided on a nickname, the Professional. And we have the Gorilla, Brenson Ribeiro. Ooh, the Gorilla. Azamat 14-0, undefeated. Brenson Ribeiro, 17-7 with a no contest. 6'3 to 5'10, 5 inches a night for Brenson, but that is nothing new for Azamat, nothing new. 10 inches in reach for Brenson, 81 to 71, very crazy, actually. Southpaw for Azamat, orthodox for Brenson Ribeiro. Azamat, minus 550, Brenson plus 400, yeah, crazy. Very, very crazy. Azamat, you know, despite being at a size and reach disadvantage, I mean, it's honestly never impacted him in his career. 36 years old from Russia, but now trades out of New Jersey. I already know we're going to get a pop when they announce that. 11 of his 14 wins by finish, 10 kills and 1 subs. He was actually supposed to fight Nikita Krylov at UFC 309. Then was supposed to fight Johnny Walker on this card. Both those guys pulling out. Actually, I think he pulled out of the Nikita Krylov fight, but I know Johnny Walker pulled out of this fight, sadly. So hopefully we get both these guys fighting on fight night. This dude's 4-0. Three finishes, three great knockouts, but he's kind of been averaging just a fight a year. Two fights in 2022, one fight 2023, one fight 2024, and now fighting in 2025. We've been waiting to see Azamat fight. And don't get me wrong, last time out against Alonzo Menifield, beautiful, dominated him, but I'm just really, really been waiting to see him back in the octagon. His opponent, Brenson Ribeiro, 28 years old, from Brazil, 9 knockouts and 7 subs, give him 60 of 17 wins by finish, and of his 7 losses, he has been finished 5 times. This dude never goes to the decision. He's a heavy underdog, though, I will say. 2-fight winning streak, wins over Kyle Machado, and most recently in March, Dayar Nurgozy, who he submitted with a Kimura. Absolutely humbled Dayar Nurgozy, who is supposed to be the next big thing in the men's light heavyweight division. Other than that, he's lost to Zhang Mingyang, lost to Magomedgadziyaluev, beat Bruno Lopez, who we just watched fight on the Contender Series. He's 2-2 in the UFC. This is make or break. This is a great opportunity for him. I think with his reach and size, he should statistically win on paper. But when we actually watch Azamat fight, he there's just something in his fist. I swear he has steel plates in his fist. He hits like prime Francis Ngannou. I mean, he touches guys and they just like wobble. And he touches them again and they go down. It makes no sense. So easy prediction for Azamat Mirzakhanov. I hate that I'm picking every single favorite, but I'm sure we'll get some upsets here and there throughout the card. But I'm going to go with Azamat Mirzakhanov by knockout. I just don't really see Brunson Ribeiro getting it done. Following that, we get to our final prelim, and it features the number 12 and number 14th ranked flyweights in the UFC as Bruno Bulldog Silva takes on Joshua the Fearless Van. Ooh, Joshua Van, I love you. Bruno Silva plus 400, Josh minus 550. The odds makers going crazy on this. 5-5 to 5-4 in favor of Joshua Van. Both men have a 65 inch reach, orthodox stance, 13-2 record for the 23-year-old Joshua Van. 14-6 with two draws and no contest for the 35-year-old Bruno Silva. That's right, the number 12-ranked Bruno, 12 years senior over Josh Van. Bruno is from Brazil, but now trains out of Arizona. 10 of his 14 wins by finish, 6 KOs, and 4 subs. Of his 6 defeats, he has been finished 3 times. These two were actually supposed to fight on March 8th, but Bruno Silva pulled out, which means the last time Bruno Silva had a UFC fight was in December against Manel Cape, where he got just brutally finished. I mean, Manel Cape was toying with him. Manel Cape was clip farming on Bruno Silva, if you will. But before that, 4-fight winning streak, all of them finishes. This dude was on absolute tear. His losses in the UFC, David Jorg, Tagiro Lembekov, Manel Cape. So Bruno Silva isn't too bad, but he is 35 in a division that doesn't favor older fighters. So probably the end of the line for Bruno Silva if he loses here to Joshua Van. Josh Van, 23, from Houston, 8 of his 13 wins by finish, 6 KOs, 2 subs. We've been following him. We've been following him since he was 21 years old, debuting. This guy is 6-1 in the UFC at 23 years old. Impressive. Only loss is an upset loss to Charles Johnson. But other than that, currently on a 3-fight winning streak. All of them by decision, but they're not boring decisions. That's the thing. They're all entertaining. Joshua Van is in entertaining fights. That's all I'll say. He does have one round to finish in 2024. But other than that, all of them have gone the distance. I do think this is a big step up in competition for little Joshy boy, but I don't think he's going to falter at all. I got Joshua Van taking home another decision here. I just think in the striking department, Joshua Van holds an advantage over Bruno Silva. Now, all of the upsets we're going to potentially see, Bruno Silva poses a massive threat at plus 400, but I was going to pick Joshua Van nonetheless. Literally, all the predictions I made were before I've seen the odds, and they're all the same. They're all the same. Maybe Jekasera Guy I've changed on, but certainly sticking with Joshua Van over Bruno Silva to then move up to number 12 spot in the rankings. After that, ladies and gentlemen, we will dive into the main card, and we kick things off. Welterweight division, and I am still surprised this guy's ranked. Vicente Luque at number 14 as he takes on the Trailblazer, Kevin Holland, Silent Assassin, Trailblazer. Great matchup here. Vicente, plus 215. Kevin, minus 275. That's right. Kevin Holland, a favorite. What do you know? Kevin Holland coming in as the favorite. Vicente, 23-10 with a draw. Kevin Holland, 27-13 with a no contest. 4 inches in height for Kevin, 6'3" to 5'11", and 6 inches in reach, 81-75. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. We'll start with Vicente. Since he's in the rankings at number 14, 33 years old, born in New Jersey. How about that? But now trains out of Brazil, 20 of 23 wins by finish, 11 KOs and 9 subs. And of his 10 defeats, he's been finished 4 times. He did have 2 canceled bouts against Nick Diaz in 2024 before finally taking a fight with Themba Garimba on short notice, whom he submitted in 52 seconds. But other than that, 1-3 in his last 4. Besides that, Joaquin Buckley, Jeff Neal, and Bilal Muhammad all beating him. His last win, Rafael dos Anjos in the main event. But other than that, Vicente Luque, known him for a while, been with the company 10 freaking years. He's entertaining. He is an entertainer through and through. I believe he's at like 17 UFC wins. This dude has been fairly dominant when given the opportunity to shine. So we'll see how Vicente does against the entertaining Kevin Holland. 32 years old from Fort Worth, Texas. 22 of 27 wins by finish, 13 KOs and 9 subs. And of his 13 defeats, 6 of them he's been finished. He's just entertaining. He is just entertained through and through, and he's finally realized he has much more success when he fights at welterweight. Been with the UFC since 2019, and since 2019, actually 2018, my bad, he has had just so many UFC fights. I mean, in 6 years, he's had, or actually 7 years now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 25 fights in 7 years. You do the math, he's averaging 4 fights a year. He's impressive. 2024, he went 1-2, win over Michael Okejcek, losses to Michael Page and Roman Dolidze. So far in 2025, this is his third freaking fight. Lost to Raider Day Raider, but we've learned that Raider Day Raider is an absolute killer. And then he beat Gunnar Nelson by unanimous decision in March and got a performance bonus for how impressive it was. That should say all we need to hear about Kevin Holland. Now, the one thing I'll say is I was really leaning Kevin Holland. I can't lie, I was severely leaning Kevin Holland, but there's just something telling me maybe you should pick Vicente Luque, Zach. Maybe you should pick Vicente Luque here, and I don't know why. And I don't know why. I think Vicente might have gotten his swagger back with his win over Themba Grimbo and how easily he submitted him. And as for Kevin, you know, Gunnar Nelson ain't no Vicente Luque. They're just not the same. And I think as much as I love and I will root for Kevin Holland, it's honestly a win-win. Because if I pick Vicente and Kevin wins, then it's a win-win. I think I'm going to go with Vicente Luque here. I just think Kevin might get his neck caught to some regard. I don't know why, but I'll be rooting for Kevin Holland. But in the past, this is just an observation, Kevin Holland can never get over someone in the rankings. He really can't. We can bring up, oh, he beat Michael Chiesa and Santiago Ponzinibbio. Oh, he beat Alex Pereira and Tim Means. No. No, none of that. Even we can bring up Jacare Souza and Joaquin Buckley in 2020. No. No, 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 no. I think Vicente Luque is going to beat Kevin Holland. I think he's going to catch him with a submission, and Kevin's going to be pissed at himself. That's what I think is going to happen. Should be entertaining. Let's see how it goes. From welterweight to bantamweight, the number 10 ranked bantamweight, Mario Bautista, back in action as he takes on the debuting, the former men's Bellator bantamweight champion, Noah Love Patchy Mix. Oh, yeah. He's in the UFC. Mario Bautista, 15-2. Patchy Mix, 20-1. What a treat. What a treat we were able to see Patchy Mix in the UFC. And he's the favorite. Minus 175. Mario's the underdog at plus 145. Crazy enough. Mario, 31 years old on a 7-fight winning streak from Arizona. 9 finishes of his 15 wins, 3 KOs, and 6 subs. Both of his losses he was finished in, once against Trevin Jones, once against Corey Sandhagen. That was freaking 4 years ago at this point now. And he was actually supposed to fight Marlon Vera in Iowa, and he was supposed to fight Marlon Vera here, but Marlon Vera has just been pulling out like crazy. No kids for Marlon, and now I think Marlon Vera probably has to fight Amin Zahabi next, if you're asking me. But last time Bautista won in October, beat Jose Aldo in a controversial decision. I didn't think it was that controversial. I mean, dude had 7 minutes of control time on the clinch. That's all I should say about that. But Mario, 7-fight winning streak. He's been dominant. He's had 3 finishes out of those 7 wins. And mind you, in his UFC run, 9-2. That's an impressive run so far. So Mario coming in was supposed to fight Marlon Vera, which I would have picked him in, but instead he's taking on the debuting Patchy Mix, 31 years old from Las Vegas, also on a 7-fight winning streak, 17 of 20 wins by finish, 2 KOs and 15 subs, and yes, he is the men's Bellator bantamweight champion, last fought in May of 2024. He is very, very entertaining. And after watching Pitbull fight, I would maybe lean more towards picking Mario Bautista, but I don't think Pitbull matched up as well as I thought he would against Yair Rodriguez as compared to Patchy Mix, who matches up almost beautifully with Mario Bautista. So we are picking Patchy Mix. I think he's going to come over and just have his way with some of the top bantamweights, in my opinion. It's hard to say how he will compete, but just from observation right now, I would pick him probably all the way to the top. Maybe you get into your Umar Nurmagomedov, your Petr Yanez, or Sean O'Malley, or Robs, he runs into some trouble. But other than that, I think Patchy Mix is going to succeed very far in the UFC. And I think a fight against Mario Bautista is a perfect test as to whether he can hang with the guys in the UFC. I think he will beat Mario Bautista. We'll have to see. I could see him knocking out Mario in round 1, submitting him in round 3. It's tough to say. Should be an entertaining fight, nonetheless. After that, we go to the men's middleweight division as Kelvin Gastelum takes on Joe Bodybags Pfeiffer. Joe's a bad guy now. Did you know everyone hates Joe Pfeiffer? If you didn't know, everyone hates Joe Pfeiffer now because he basically trashed the entire country of Mexico for no reason. For no reason. And now everyone's out to get him. And honestly, Joe, I'm still rocking with you. Kelvin, 20-9. Joe, 13-3. 6'2 to 5'9. 5 inches in height for Joe Pfeiffer and 4 inches in reach. 75-71. Southpaw for Kelvin. Orthodox for Joe Pfeiffer. Pfeiffer minus 400. Kelvin plus 300. Wow. Calvin Gastelum, big underdog, but when isn't he? 33 years old from Arizona. 10 of his 20 wins by finish, 5 KOs, 5 subs. None of his 9 defeats, he's been submitted 3 times. These two were supposed to fight in Mexico City March 29th. Joe Pfeiffer apparently got sick or something the day or two before, and this fight never ended up happening. Calvin last fought in June of 2024, where he got a win over Daniel Rodriguez. I actually remember that. I was in a car dealership that day getting a new car. Before that, lost to Sean Brady. That win aged well. Beat Chris Curtis. Good win there. And, of course, he had his saga in 2021 where he lost to Cannoneer and Whitaker. Beatty and Einish. Lost to Jack Manson. Lost to Darren Till. Lost to Adesanya. Calvin Gastelum is Calvin Gastelum. This is going to be his 12th year fighting in the UFC, and we'll see how he does at his natural weight class of middleweight as opposed to welterweight against Joe Bodybag Pfeiffer. 28 years old from Pennsylvania, 12 of his 13 wins by finish, 9 KOs and 3 subs. And, you know, even though his last MMA fight was in June when he knocked out Marc-Andre Barriot in 85 seconds, he did win a grappling matchup in December 28th to be exact. So Joe Pfeiffer has been staying active. He is, of course, 4-5-1. 5-1 in the UFC. His lone decision loss is to Jack Hermanson in a main event in February of 2024, where he won the first two rounds and then lost the last three in embarrassing fashion. Look, I don't know the state of the chin that Calvin Gastelum possesses, but I know that Joe Pfeiffer's coming to take it off. I also know Calvin Gastelum would be the guy to humble Joe Pfeiffer. I do know that for a fact, but I am not picking against Joe Pfeiffer, not against the man who beat Francis Ngannou's punch power record on Joe Rogan's, punching machine. I'm going to ride with Joe Pfeiffer all day. You know, I've been riding with him since the start. I think he's much better than that Jack Hermanson loss. This will be a big tell. This will be a big tell if he's officially back. It's not KO Marc-Andre Barriot. I mean, freaking Dustin Stolfus knocked out Marc-Andre Barriot. Anyone can knock him out, just so you know. So, gonna ride with Joe Pfeiffer, and we will see how that fight takes place. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, we get into our first, of our two main events as the number 3 woman's pound-for-pound fighter on the planet takes on the number 7th-ranked woman's fighter on the planet as the champion at women's bantamweight, Juliana Pena, takes on the number 2-ranked Kayla Harrison. Should be entertaining. The Venezuelan vixen, 13-5, Kayla, 18-1, 5'8 to 5'6, 2 inches in height for Kayla, 3 inches in reach for Juliana, 69-66, southpaw with that left for Kayla, orthodox with the right for Juliana Pena. Pena, plus 455, Kayla Harrison is the biggest favorite on the card at minus 625. Oh my goodness. The champion, Juliana Pena, 35 years old from Washington, 7 of her 13 wins by finish, 3 KOs and 4 subs. Of her 5 defeats, she's been finished 3 times. Juliana, been with the UFC since 2013. Now, mind you, we mentioned that Kevin Holland has 25 fights in his 7 years with the company. In the 12 years Juliana has been with the company, she's had 11 UFC fights. 11 UFC fights. I kid you not. She's had 11 UFC fights. Last time she fought, October 2024, she picked up a, you know, very close decision against Aguil Pett, and I can't lie. Before that, Amanda Nunes 50-40'd her in Aussie, in my book, in July of 2022, just brutalized her. And Aussie, no idea Julia Pena is the champion right now. And it's weird to think that Julia Pena is actually a first ballot Hall of Famer, because she's a 2-time champion. Did you know Julia Pena has won more world championships than who's someone I could use? Because technically, when you defend it, you technically still win it. So Conor McGregor, maybe? No, Conor McGregor won multiple times. But you get the point I was trying to make. Julia Pena is somehow one of the greatest women fighters of all time on paper, I guess. But I mean, little to be loved about her. Her fighting style is dull and boring, and it's like she's honestly not unlikable. She's pretty good looking, and she just opens her mouth. It was actually Kayla Harrison who said this, and, you know, she's like, I have so much respect for Juliana. She just opens her mouth, and it makes it so hard to respect her, and she is honestly just the worst on the microphone. It's not even like getting heat. It's just like, ugh, close her up. It's just awful hearing her speak. We'll see how she does here, but honestly, I got her getting ran through by Kayla Harrison. We all know her, the gold medalist, the 34-year-old from Florida, on a 3-fight winning streak, 13 of 18 wins by finish, 6 KOs, 7 subs, 2-0 in the UFC, beat Holly Holm, beat Caitlin Vieira, yeah. Yeah, Kayla Harrison, there's a little to be said here. Round 2 submission in my book for Kayla. I could even see her getting a round 1 ground and pound TKO. All right, it's Kayla Harrison all day. Kayla Harrison is here to save the one's bantamweight division, and Amanda Nunes is apparently rumored to be fighting the winner of this contest, which honestly makes sense because if Kayla Harrison wins, who is she going to fight? Really? Kellen Vieira rematch? Norma Dumont? I mean, Ellen Perez? No. That's a perfect fight right there as we get the one's bantamweight division moving along. Kayla Harrison gets past Juliana Pena, dominates her, then takes on Amanda Nunes. Sign me up. All day, I'm here for it. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to our main event of the evening, the rematch with no one asked for. No one asked for this rematch, but we do have the number 4 pound-for-pound fighter on the planet, Merab the Machine Dvevashvili, taking on the number 14 ranked man on the planet, number 14 pound-for-pound fighter, the number 1 ranked bantamweight contender, Sugar Sean O'Malley. Of course, we know, we love them. They fought at the Sphere. We saw what we needed to see, I thought. And no, the UFC just wanted to run it back just to make some money. So, Merab, 19-4, Sean Sugar, 18-2, with a no contest. 5'11 to 5'6, 5 inches in height for Sean, 4 inches in reach, 72 to 66, or 68, I should say. Switch stance for Sugar, orthodox for the Machine. Merab's the favorite, minus 300. Sugar, plus 240. I feel like we just covered them 8 months ago, because I did cover them 8 months ago, which is weird to think that was that long ago. But Merab, 34 years old, from Georgia, now trains out of New York, so I'm sure he'll get a little pop when that's announced. 12-fight winning streak for the guy. It's crazy. He is right behind Islam on this winning streak, and it's been a great winning streak. I mean, the names he's picked up: Jose Aldo, Marlon Moraes, Petr Yan, Henry Cejudo, Sean O'Malley, Umar Nurmagomedov. He's been on absolute tear. I mean, I honestly still think him and Umar's fight might be fight of the year right now. I'll have to go back and look, but right now I think that is my 2025 fight of the year contender. Certainly one of the best title fights we've had of the year so far. This dude has been on an absolute run, and you know, I didn't pick him against Umar. I didn't pick him against Sean. And for some reason, I picked him against Henry Cejudo, which makes no sense. But Merab, back in action. Only 4 finishes. Only 3 knockouts and 1 sub in his entire career. Maybe that changes here. Maybe he submits Sean O'Malley. Maybe he knocks out Sean O'Malley from ground and pound. We'll have to see. But of course, Sean O'Malley, the contender, 30 years old from Arizona, 13 of his 18 wins by finish, 11 KOs, and 2 subs. Last time he fought, September, lost to Merab. But now's a great opportunity to bounce back, to win, to get back in the victory column. And will he? I don't know. I honestly don't know. It's hard to say what will happen in this rematch, but if I'm a betting man, and you know, I guess I am to an extent a betting man, I'm going with Merab. You know, here's the thing. I can compare this to a lot of things, but the fact of the matter is, Merab dominated Sean. Whoever was throwing out 48-47 scorecards was being generous to Sean O'Malley. I didn't think he won. I didn't think he got a single round when they fought the first time. And Sean set out, you know, stay off social media apparently for 9 months. And what did Merab went out and do? He went out and beat Umar Nurmagomedov, who everyone was scared of. Hand him his first career loss. So Merab, I think, is just going to do what he does best. And he's going to take it to Sean O'Malley, and he's going to grapple him and drown him. And this might even be more dominant than the first time around. Now, I don't want to say I'm sleeping on Sean O'Malley. I'm not. But also, it's like Sean's lost his aura. Sean's lost his stigma. He froze up against Merab. And, you know, we know he doesn't freeze up. We saw the Marlon Vera performance. We saw the Aljamain Sterling performance. We saw the Petr Yan performance. He doesn't normally freeze up. And he froze up when he took on Merab. So the question at hand will be, can Sugar get past the stigma, go back to his roots where he's dancing, where he's doing all these fancy moves, landing the big shots and celebrating, or will he just mope and pout the whole fight like he did against Merab the first time? Now, I think Merab going to take him down, going to get after him. And honestly, let's go with a Merab knockout just to be spicy and sprinkling a little bets here and there. But ladies and gentlemen, that is your full UFC 316 preview. I mean, holy cow, lots of action. Lots of action, 40 minutes worth if you're tracking how long we talked about it, of discussing the UFC. So this weekend, Saturday, you get Worlds Collide, WWE in the morning. You get Money in the Bank, which we discussed. You get UFC 316, which we discussed. This Saturday is going to be very action-packed. You even get NBA and NHL action. I mean, what more could you ask for as an entertainment fan? So that's all we got on today's episode. Lots more of fun content coming up, including the 200th episode. I got to do something special for that. 200 episodes, I probably should start recording myself. I really should start recording myself. I didn't even use my phone this time. I think I could probably formulate a podcast where I don't have to use my phone and I can film myself. I think that's what we should do. Although, I don't have much storage left, sadly. That'll be something we'll have to work on. But as for now, ladies and gentlemen, go have an amazing weekend. Go let me know in the comment section. Does anyone actually listen to this? You know, sometimes I wonder that. Does anyone actually listen to this? I think I have to speak like people do, but I don't actually know. You know, leave a comment on the Instagram. Leave a comment. In any regard, send me a hate message. Just let me know anyone's watching this. But yeah. You know what? For anyone who is watching, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.